can't think of any use for call me maybe. Penelope? She doesn't answer. I lean off my bed and swing my pillow at her legs. That's how close the beds are. Baz wouldn't even have to get out of his to kill me. Or vice versa, I guess. Penny. What? She says into Baz's pillow. You have to go back to your room.
Don't want to.
You have to. The mage will suspend you if you get caught in here.
Let him. I could use the free time.
I get out of bed and stand over her. Her dark hair is spread out over the pillowcase, and her glasses are smashed into her cheek. Her skirt has hiked up, and her bare thigh looks plump and smooth. I pinch her. She jumps up.
Come on,
I say. I'll walk you. Penny straightens her glasses and untwists her shirt.
No, I don't want you to see how I get past the wards.
Because that's not something you want to share with your best friend.
Because it's fun watching you try to figure it out.
I open my door and peek down the staircase. I don't see or hear anyone.
Fine,
I say, holding the door open.
Good night.
Penny walks past me.
Good night, Simon. See you tomorrow.
I grin.
Again.
I can't help it.
It's good to be back.
See you tomorrow. As soon as I'm alone, I change into my school pajamas. Baz brings his from home, but I like the school ones. I don't sleep in pajamas when I'm at the juvenile centres. I never have. It makes me feel, I don't know, vulnerable. I change and crawl into bed, sighing. These nights at Watford, before Baz gets here, are the only nights in my life when I actually sleep. I don't know what time it is when I wake up. The room is dark and there's a shaft of moonlight slicing across my bed. I think I see a woman standing by the window, and at first I think it's Penny. Then the figure shifts and I think it's Baz. Then I decide I'm dreaming and fall back into sleep. 6. Lucy.
I have so much I want to tell you, but time is short, and my voice doesn't carry.
7. Simon. The sun is just rising when I hear my door creak open. I pull the blankets up over my head. Go away, I say, expecting Penny to start talking at me anyway. She's good at immediately making me forget how much I missed her over the summer. Someone clears his throat. I open my eyes and see the mage standing just inside the door, looking amused, at least on the surface. There's something darker underneath. Sir, I sit up. Sorry.
Don't apologize, Simon. You must not have heard me knock.
No, let me just... I'll just, get dressed.
Don't trouble yourself,
he says, walking to the window, giving Baz's bed a wide berth. Even the mage is afraid of vampires. Though he wouldn't use the word afraid, he'd say something like cautious or prudent.
I'm sorry I wasn't here to welcome you back yesterday, he says. How was your journey?
I push the covers off and sit at the edge of my bed. I'm still in my pajamas, but at least I'm sitting up. Fine, I say. I mean, I suppose, not exactly fine. My taxi driver was a goblin.
Another goblin?
He turns from the window to me, hands clasped behind his back.
Persistent, aren't they? Was it alone?
Yes, sir. Tried to scarp her off with me. He shakes his head.
They never think to come in pairs.
What spell did you use?
Used my blade, sir.
A bite at my lip. Fine, he says. And into thin air to clean it up. The mage raises his eyebrow.
Excellent, Simon.
He looks down at my pajamas and bare feet, and then seems to study my face. What about this summer?
Anything to report? Anything unusual?
I would have contacted you, sir,
I can contact him if I need to. I have his mobile number. Also, I could send a bird. The mage nods. Good. He looks at me for a few more seconds, then turns back to the window, like he's observed everything about me that he needs to. The sunlight catches in his thick brown hair, and for a minute, he looks even more like a swashbuckler than usual. He's in uniform. Dark green canvas leggings, tall brown boots, a green tunic with straps and small pockets, with a sword hanging in a woven scabbard from his tooled belt. Unlike mine, his blade is fully visible. Penny's mum, Professor Bunce, says that previous mages wore a ceremonial cowl and cape, and that other headmasters wore robes and mortarboards. The mage, she says, has created his own uniform. She calls it a costume. I think Professor Bunce must hate the mage more than anyone who isn't actually his enemy. The only time I ever hear Penny's dad talk out loud is when her mum gets going on the mage. He'll put his hand on her arm and say, "Now, Mitali." And then she'll say, "I apologize, Simon. I know the mage is your foster father." But he isn't. Not really. The mage has never presented himself to me that way. As family. He's always treated me as an ally, even when I was a little kid. The very first time he brought me to Watford, he sat me down in his office and told me everything. About the insidious humdrum, about the missing magic, about the holes in the atmosphere like dead spots. I was still trying to get it through my head that magic was real, and there he was, telling me that something was killing it, eating it, ending it, and that only I could help. You're too young to hear this, Simon. 11 is too young. But it isn't fair to keep any of this from you any longer. The insidious humdrum is the greatest threat the world of mages has ever faced. He's powerful. He's pervasive. Fighting him is like fighting off sleep when you're long past the edge of exhaustion. But fight him we must. We want to protect you. I vow to do so with my life. But you must learn, Simon, as soon as possible, how best to protect yourself. He is our greatest threat, and you are our greatest hope. I was too stunned to respond or to ask any questions. Too young. I just wanted to see the mage do that trick again, the one where he made a map roll out all by itself. I spent that first year at Watford telling myself that I was dreaming, and the next year telling myself that I wasn't. I'd already been attacked by ogres, shattered the circle of standing stones, and grown 5 inches before I thought to ask the real question. Why me? Why did I have to fight the humdrum? The mage has answered that question 12 different ways over the years. Because I was chosen. Because I was prophesied. Because the humdrum won't leave me alone. But none of those answers are real. Penelope has given me the only answer that I know what to do with. Because you can, Simon, and someone has to. The mage is watching something out my window. I think about inviting him to sit down, then I try to remember whether I've ever seen him sit down. I shift my weight and the bed creaks. He turns to me, looking troubled. Sir? Simon. The humdrum. Did you find him? What have I missed? The mage rubs his chin in the notch between his thumb and forefinger, then jerks his head quickly from side to side. Nothing. We're no closer to finding him, and other matters have needed my immediate attention. How could anything be more important than the humdrum? I blurt out. Not more important, he says, just more pressing. It's the old families. They're testing me. He balls his right hand into a fist. Half of Wales has stopped tithing. The pitches are paying 3 members of the coven to stay away from the meetings, so we don't have a quorum. And there have been skirmishes up and down the road to London all summer long. Skirmishes? Traps. Tussles. Tests. They're all tests, Simon. You know the old families would seize the reins if they thought for a moment I was distracted. They'd roll back everything we've accomplished.
Do they think they can fight the humdrum without us?
I think they're so short-sighted, he says, looking over at me, that they don't care. They just want power, and they want it now.
Well, I don't care about them,
I say.
If the humdrum takes our magic, we won't have anything to scrap over. We should be fighting the humdrum.
And we will, he says, when the time is right, when we know how to beat him. But until then, my first priority is keeping you safe. Simon.
He folds his arms.
I've been consulting with the other members of the Coven, with those I can trust. We think maybe our efforts to protect you have backfired. Despite the spells and surveillance, the humdrum seems to have the best luck getting to you when you're here, at Watford. He spirited you away in June without triggering any of our defenses.
It's embarrassing to hear him say this. It feels like I'm the one failing, not the mage or the protection spells. I'm supposed to be the only one who can fight the humdrum, but I finally got a chance to face him, and the most I could do was run away. I don't think I'd have managed even that without Penelope.
The mage clenches his jaw. He has one of those chins that flattens out in the middle with a sharp dimple like he was nicked by a knife. I'm dead jealous of it. We've decided, he says slowly, that you would be safer somewhere other than Watford.
I'm not sure what he's getting at.
Sir, the Coven has secured a place for you, and a private tutor. I can't talk about the details now, but I'll take you there myself. We'll leave soon. I need to be back by nightfall.
You want me to leave Watford?
He narrows his eyes. The mage hates to repeat himself. Yes. You won't need to pack much. Your boots and your cloak. Any artifacts you want to keep.
Sir, I can't leave Watford. Classes start this week.
He cocks his head. Simon, you're not a child. There's nothing more for you to learn at Watford.
Maybe he's right. I'm a hopeless student. It's not like this year is going to make or break me. But still, I can't leave Watford. It's my last year.
The mage rubs his beard, his eyes narrow to slits.
I just can't,
I say again. I try to think of why not, but all that comes to me is no.
I can't leave Watford. I've been waiting all summer to get here. I've been waiting my whole life. I'm always either at Watford or wishing I was at Watford. And next year that will change. It has to. But not yet.
No, I say. I can't.
Simon.
His voice is stern. This isn't a suggestion. Your life is at stake, and the entire world of mages is depending on you.
I feel like arguing that point. Baz isn't depending on me.
None of the magicians who stand with the House of Pitch believe I'm their savior.
I grind my teeth so tight I can practically feel the shape of them. I shake my head.
The mage frowns down at me like I'm a child who's refusing to listen.
Hasn't it ever occurred to you, Simon, that the humdrum attacks you only when you're here?
Has it only just occurred to you?
I swallow.
Sir, I add too late.
I don't understand this, he says, raising his voice. You've never questioned my decisions before.
You've never asked me to leave Watford before.
His face is hard.
Simon, we're at war. Do I need to remind you of that?
No, sir.
And we all make sacrifices at wartime.
But we've always been at war, I say. As long as I've been here, we can't just stop living because we're at war.
Can't we?
He's finally lost his temper. He jerks his hand back down to the hilt of his sword.
Look at me, Simon. Have you ever known me to indulge myself with a normal life? Where is my wife? My children? Where's my house in the country with my cozy chair and a fat cocker spaniel to bring me my slippers? When do I go on holiday? When do I take a break? When do I do anything other than prepare for the battle ahead? We don't get to ignore our responsibilities because we're bored with them.
My head drops down like he shoved it.
I'm not bored, I mutter.
Speak up. I lift my head. I'm not bored, sir. Our eyes meet. Get dressed. Gather your things. I feel every muscle in my body grab, every joint lock.
No.
I can't. I just got here, and this summer was the worst summer yet. I held on because I was coming to Watford at the end of it, but I can't hold on any longer. I don't have it in me. My reserves are empty, and the mage won't even tell me where he wants me to go. And what about Penny? And Agatha?
I'm shaking my head. I hear the mage take in a sharp breath, and when I look up, there's a haze of red between us.
Fuck no.
He steps away from me.
Simon, he says, his wand out. Stay cool.
I fumble for my own wand and start running through spells.
Keep it together. Suck it up. Steady on. Hold fast.
But spells take magic, and drawing on my magic right now just draws it to the surface. The red between us thickens. I close my eyes and try to disappear, to think of nothing at all. I fall back on the bed and my wand bounces onto the floor. When I can focus again, the mage is leaning over me, his hand on my forehead. Something is smoking. I think it's my sheets.
I'm sorry, I whisper. I didn't mean...
I know,
he says, but he still looks scared. He pushes my hair up off my forehead with one hand, then brushes his knuckles down my cheek.
Please don't make me leave,
I beg. The mage looks in my eyes and through them. I can see him deliberating, then relenting.
I'll talk to the coven, he says. Perhaps we still have time.
He purses his lips together. He has a pencil-thin moustache just above his lips. Baz and Agatha both like to make fun of it.
But it isn't just your safety we're concerned with, Simon.
He's still leaning over me. I feel like there's nothing to breathe between us but smoke.
I'll talk to the coven, he says.
He squeezes my shoulder and stands.
Do you need the nurse?
No, sir.
You'll call for me if something changes. Or if you see anything strange, any signs of the humdrum or anything out of the ordinary.
I nod. The mage strides out of the room, his palm resting on the hilt of his sword, that means he's thinking, and closes the door firmly behind him. I roll around and make sure that my bed isn't actually burning, then collapse back into sleep.
8. Lucy.
And the fog is so thick.
9. Simon.
Penny's sitting at my desk when I wake up again. She's reading, a book as thick as her arm.
It's past noon, she says. You've become an absolute sluggard in foster care. I'm writing a letter to the Telegraph.
You can't just let yourself into my room without knocking, I say, sitting up and rubbing my eyes, even if you do have a magical key.
It's not a key, and I did knock. You sleep like a corpse.
I walk past her to the bathroom, and she sniffs, then closes her book.
Simon, did you go off?
Sort of. It's a long story.
Were you attacked?
No. I shut the door to the bathroom and raise my voice. I'll tell you later. Penny's going to flip her shit when I tell her the mage wants to send me away. I look in the mirror and try to decide whether to shower. My hair's matted to my head on one side and standing up on top. I always break into a sweat when I lose control like that. I feel grimy all over. I examine my chin in the mirror, hoping I need a shave, but I don't. I never really do. I'd grow a moustache just like the mages if I could, and I wouldn't care at all if Baz took the piss. I strip off my shirt and give the gold cross around my neck a rub. I'm not religious.
It's a talisman. Been passed down in Agatha's family for years. A ward against vampires. It was black and tarnished when Dr. Wellbelove gave it to me, but I've rubbed it gold. Sometimes I chew on it, which is probably a bad thing to do to a medieval relic. I don't really need to wear it all summer, but once you get used to wearing an anti-vampire necklace, it seems stupid to take it off. All the other kids in care always think I'm religious, and they think I smoke a pack a day because I always sort of smell like smoke. I look at the mirror again. Penny's right. I'm too thin. My ribs stick out. You can see the muscles in my stomach, and not because I'm ripped, because I haven't really eaten for 3 months. Also, I've got moles all over my body, which make me look poxed even when I'm not suffering from malnutrition. I'm taking a shower, I shout. Hurry, we'll miss lunch. I hear Penny moving around the room while I climb into the shower, and then she's talking to me again from just outside the door. Agatha's back. I turn on the water. Simon, did you hear me? Agatha's back.
I heard her.
What's the etiquette for talking to your girlfriend after 3 months, when the last time you saw her, she was holding hands with your nemesis, both hands, facing each other, like they were about to break into song? Things had got dodgy with Agatha last year, even before I saw her with Baz in the wood. She'd been distant and quiet, and when I was injured in March, someone tampered with my wand, she just rolled her eyes, like I'd brought it on myself. Agatha's the only girl I've ever dated. We've been together for 3 years now, since we were 15, but I wanted her long before that. I've wanted her since the first time I saw her. Walking across the great lawn, her long, pale hair rippling in the wind. I remember seeing her and thinking that I'd never seen anything so beautiful, and that if you were that beautiful, that graceful, nothing could ever really touch you. It would be like being a lion or a unicorn. Nobody could really touch you, because you wouldn't even be on the same plane as everyone else. Even sitting next to Agatha makes you feel sort of untouchable, exalted. It's like sitting in the sun. So imagine how it feels to date her, like you're carrying that light around with you all the time. There's a picture of us together from the last winter solstice. She's in a long white dress, and her mother plaited mistletoe into her milky gold hair. I'm wearing white too. I felt naff, but in the photo, well, I look fine. Standing next to Agatha, wearing a suit her father lent me, I actually look like who I'm supposed to be. The dining hall is half full today. Classes start tomorrow. People are sitting on tables and standing in loose circles, catching up. Lunch is ham and cheese rolls. Penelope grabs a plate of butter for me, and I smile. I'd eat butter with a spoon if it were acceptable. I did it anyway my first year, whenever I was the first one down to breakfast. I scan the room for Agatha, but don't see her. She must not be at lunch. I can't believe she'd be in the dining hall and not sit at our table, even considering everything. Reese and Gareth, the boys who live in the room under mine, are sitting at our table already, at the far end. All right, Simon, Reese says. Gareth is shouting at someone across the hall. All right, fellas, I answer. Reese nods at Penny. Penelope has never had time for most of our classmates, so they don't really have time for her. It would bother me if everyone ignored me like that. But she seems to appreciate the lack of distractions. Sometimes when I'm walking through the dining hall just saying hello to people, she'll drag me by my sleeve to hurry me up. You have too many friends, she'll say. I'm pretty sure that's not possible. And anyway, I wouldn't call them all friends. There are only so many hours in the day, Simon. 2, 3 people, that's all any of us have time for. There are more people than that in your immediate family, Penny. I know. It's a struggle. Once, I started listing off all the people that I truly cared about. When I got to number 7, Penelope told me I either needed to whittle down my list or stop making friends immediately.
My mother says you should never have more people in your life than you could defend from a hungry Rakshasa.
I don't know what that is, I told her, but I'm not worried. I'm good in a fight. I like having people. Close ones like Penny and Agatha and the Mage and Ebb the Goatherd and Miss Possibelf and Dr. Wellbelove. And just friendly ones like Rhys and Gareth. If I followed Penny's rules, I'd never find enough people for a football match. She waves half-heartedly at the boys, then sits between me and them, turning towards me to close off our conversation.
I saw Agatha with her parents, she says, earlier in the cloisters.
The cloisters is the oldest and largest girls' house, a long, low building at the other side of the grounds. It only has one door, and all the windows are made up of tiny panes of glass. The school must have been mega paranoid when it started letting girls in back in the 1600s. You saw who? I ask.
Agatha.
Oh.
I can go get her if you want,
she offers. Since when do you pass notes for me?
I thought you might not want to talk to her for the first time in front of everyone, she says, after what happened.
I shrug. It'll be fine. Agatha and I are fine. Penny looks surprised, then dubious. Then she shakes her head, giving up.
Anyway,
she says, tearing off a piece of her sandwich, we should track down the Mage after lunch. Why?
Why? Are you playing dumb today because you think I'll find it cute?
Yes. She rolls her eyes.
We need to track down the Mage and make him tell us what's been going on all summer. What he's found out about the Humdrum.
He hasn't found out anything. I already talked to him. She stops mid-bite.
When?
He came to my room this morning.
And when were you going to tell me this?
I shrug again, licking butter off my thumb. When you gave me a chance. Penny rolls her eyes again. Penny rolls her eyes a lot.
He didn't have anything to say. Not about the Humdrum.
I look down at my plate, then quickly around us.
He says the old families are causing trouble. She nods. My mum says they're trying to organise a vote of no confidence against him.
Can they do that?
They're trying. And there have been duels all summer. Premal's friend, Sam, got into it with one of the Grimm cousins after a wedding, and now he's on trial.
Who is?
The Grimm.
For what?
Forbidden spells, she says. Banned words.
The Mage thinks I should go, I say.
What? Go where?
He thinks I should leave Watford.
Penny's eyes are big. To fight the Humdrum?
No, I shake my head. To just go. He thinks I'd be safer somewhere else. He thinks everyone here would be safer if I left. Her eyes kept getting bigger.
Where would you go, Simon?
He didn't say. Some secret place.
Like a hideout, she asks.
Well, I guess.
But what about school?
He doesn't think that's important right now.
Penny snorts. She thinks the Mage undervalues education at the best of times, especially the classics.
When he dropped the linguistics program, she wrote a stern letter to the faculty board.
So he wants you to do what?
Go away, stay safe, train. She folds her arms.
On a mountain, with ninjas, like Batman.
I laugh, but she doesn't laugh with me. She leans forward.
You can't just leave, Simon. He can't stash you in a hole your whole life.
I'm not going, I say. I told him no. She pulls her chin back.
You told him no?
I can't just leave Watford.
It's our last year, isn't it?
I agree.
You told him no?
I told him I didn't want to. I don't want to hide and wait for the Humdrum to find me. That doesn't feel like a plan.
And what did the Mage say?
Not much. I got upset and started to...
I knew it! Your room smelled like a campfire. Oh, my word. You went off on the Mage.
No. I pulled back.
Really?
She looks impressed.
Well done, Simon.
I think I scared him, though.
It'd scare me too.
Penny, I...
What?
Do you think he's right?
I just said I didn't.
No. About me being a danger to Watford. A danger to... I look over at the first-year tables.
They've all skipped sandwiches and are eating big bowls of jam roly-poly.
Everyone.
Penny starts tearing at her sandwich again.
Of course not. Penelope. She sighs.
You pulled back, didn't you? This morning. When have you ever hurt anyone but yourself?
Smoke and mirrors, Penny. Should I make a list? I'll start with the decapitations. I'll start with yesterday.
Those were battles, and they don't count.
I think they count. She folds her arms again.
But they count differently.
It's not even just that. I say, it's... I'm a target, aren't I? The humdrum only attacks me when I'm at Watford, and he only attacks Watford when I'm here.
That's not your fault.
So?
Well, you can't help that.
I can, I say. I could go away.
No!
Compelling argument, Pen. I spread butter on my third ham and cheese roll. My hands are shaking.
No, Simon, you can't just go away. You shouldn't. Look, if you're a target, then I'm the most at risk. I spend the most time with you.
I know.
No, I mean, look at me. I'm fine.
I look at her.
I'm fine, Simon. Even Baz is fine, and he's constantly stuck with you.
I feel like you're glossing over all the times you've nearly died just because you were with me. The humdrum kidnapped me a few months ago and you got dragged along.
Thank more gun I did.
She's looking in my eyes, so I try not to look away.
Sometimes I'm glad Penny wears glasses. Her eye contact is so fierce, it's good to have a buffer.
I told the mage no, I repeat.
Good, she says. Keep telling him. Nan!
A little girl's shout tears through our conversation, and I'm already whispering the incantation to summon my blade. Across the hall, the girl, a second or third year, is running towards a shimmery figure at the door.
Oh,
Penelope says, awed. The figure fades in and out, like Princess Leia's hologram. When the girl reaches it, it looks like an older woman in a white trouser suit. It kneels down and catches her. They huddle together in the archway. Then the figure fades out completely. The girl just stands, shaking, and a few of her friends run to her, jumping up and down.
So cool, Penny says.
She turns to me and sees my blade.
Great snake, Simon, put that away.
I keep it up. What was that?
You don't know.
Penelope.
She got a visiting. Lucky kid.
What? I sheathe the blade.
What kind of visiting? Simon, the veil is lifting. I know you know about this. We studied it in magical history.
I make a face and sit down again, trying to decide whether I'm done with my lunch.
And on the 20th turn, Penny says, when the year wanes and night and day sit in peace across the table, the veil will lift. And any who have light to cast may cross it, though they may not tarry. Greet them with joy and with trust, for their mouths, though dead, speak truth.
She's using her quoting voice, so I know it's from some ancient text or another. You're not helping, I say.
The veil is lifting, she says again. Every 20 years, dead people can talk to the living if they have something that really needs to be said.
Oh, I say. I guess maybe I have heard of that. I thought it was a myth.
One would think, after 7 years, you'd stop saying that out loud.
Well, how am I supposed to know? There isn't a book, is there? All the magical things that are actually true and all the ones that are bollocks just like you thought.
You're the only magician who wasn't raised with magic. You're the only one who would read a book like that.
Father Christmas isn't real, I say, but the Tooth Fairy is. There's no rhyme or reason to this stuff.
Well, the veil is totally real, Penny says. It's what keeps souls from walking.
But it's lifting now. I feel like getting my sword out again. The autumnal equinox is coming, she says, when day and night are the same length. The veil thins, then lifts, sort of like fog, and people come back and tell us things.
All of us?
I wish. People only come back if they've something important to say, something true. It's like they come back to testify.
That sounds dramatic.
My mother says her aunt came back 20 years ago to tell them about a hidden treasure. Mum's kind of hoping she'll come back again this time to tell us more.
What kind of treasure?
Books.
Of course.
I decide to finish my sandwich and Penny's boiled egg. But sometimes, she says, it's scandalous. People come back to reveal affairs, murders. The theory is you have a better shot of crossing over if your message serves justice.
How can anyone know that? It's just a theory, Penny says.
But if Aunt Beryl comes to me, I'm going to ask her as much as I can before she fades out again.
I look back across the hall. I wonder what that girl's granny told her.
Penny laughs and stacks her dishes. Probably her secret toffee recipe.
So these visitors, they're not zombies. It doesn't hurt to be sure about these things.
No, Simon, they're harmless. Unless you're afraid of the truth.
10. The Mage. I shouldn't make him go. I could. He's not a child anymore, but he would still take an order. I promised to take care of him. How do you keep a promise like that? To take care of a child when the child is the greatest power you know. And what does it mean to take care of power? Do you use it? Conserve it? Keep it out of the wrong hands? I thought I could be of more help to Simon, especially by now. Help him come into his power. Help him take hold of it. There must be a spell for him. Magic words that would fortify him. A ritual that would make the power itself manageable. I haven't found it yet, but that doesn't mean that it isn't out there, that it doesn't exist. And if I find it, is it enough to stabilize his power if I can't stabilize the boy? This isn't in the prophecies. There's no talk about headstrong children. I could hide Simon from the humdrum itself. I could hide him from everything he isn't ready to face. I should order him to go away. He'd still do it. He'd still listen to me. But what if he didn't? Simon Snow, would I lose you completely? 11. Lucy.
Hear me. He was the first of his family at Watford, the first with enough power to get past the trials. He came all by himself, all the way from Wales, on the train. David. We called him Davy. Well, some of us just called him Daft. And he didn't have any friends. I don't think he ever had any friends. I don't even think I was his friend. Not at first. I was just the only one listening. World of mages, he'd say. What world, I ask you? What world? This isn't a school. Schools educate people. Schools lift people up. Do you understand me? I'm getting an education, I said.
You are, aren't you?
His blue eyes glinted. There was always a fire in his eyes.
You get power. You get the secret password, because your father had it, and your grandfather. You're in the club.
So were you, Davy.
Only because I was too powerful for them to deny me.
Right, I said. So now you're in the club.
Lucky me.
I can't tell if you mean that.
Lucky me, he said.
Unlucky everyone else. This place isn't about sharing knowledge. It's about keeping knowledge in the hands of the rich.
You mean the most powerful?
Same difference. He spat. He always spat. His eyes were always glinting, and his mouth was always spitting.
So you don't want to be here?
I asked. Did you know that the church used to give services in Latin because they didn't trust the congregation with God's word?
Are you talking about Christianity? I don't know anything about Christianity.
Why are we here, Lucy, when so many others are refused?
Because we're the most powerful. It's important for us to learn how to manage and use our magic.
Is it that important? Wouldn't it be more important to teach the least powerful, to help them make the most of what they do have? Should we teach only poets to read?
I don't understand what you want. You're here, Davy, at Watford.
I'm here, and maybe if I meet the right people, if I bow and scrape before every pitch and grin, they'll teach me the trickiest spells. They'll give me a seat at the table, and then I can spend my life like they do, making sure that no one else takes it from me.
That's not what I'm going to do with my magic.
He stopped spitting for a second to squint at me. What are you going to do, Lucy?
See the world.
The world of mages?
No. The world. I have so much to tell you, but time is short, and the veil is thick, and it takes magic to speak, a soul full of it.
12. Simon. As it happens, I am alone when I see Agatha. I'm lying out on the lawn, thinking about the first time I got here. The grass was so nice that I didn't think we were allowed to walk on it. Agatha's wearing jeans and a gauzy white shirt, and she comes up the hill towards me, slowly blocking the sun, so there's a halo for just a second around her blonde hair. She smiles, but I can tell she's nervous. I wonder if she's been looking for me. I sit up, and she sits down on the ground next to me. Hey, I say.
Hello, Simon.
How was your summer? She gives me a look like she can't believe how lame that question is, but also like she's kind of relieved to make small talk.
Good,
she says.
Quiet.
Did you travel? I ask.
Only for events.
Agatha's a show jumper, competitively. I think she wants to jump for Great Britain someday, or maybe ride. I know jack all about horses. She tried to get me on a horse once, and I chickened out.
Simon, you can't be afraid of this horse. You've slain dragons.
Well, I'm not afraid to slay it, am I? You want me to ride it. Any luck? I ask now.
Some,
she says.
Mostly skill.
Ah, I nod my head. Right, sorry. I sort of hate to talk to Agatha about horse stuff, and not because I'm afraid of them. It's just one more thing I'll never get right. All that posh crap. Regattas and galas and, I don't know, polo matches. Agatha's mum has hats that look like wedding cakes. It's too much. I've got enough to deal with trying to figure out what it means to be a magician. I'll never pass as to manner. Maybe Agatha would be better off with Baz after all, if he weren't evil. I must look like I'm fuming because she clears her throat uncomfortably.
Do you want me to go?
No, I say. No. I'm glad to see you.
You haven't actually looked at me,
she says. So I look at her. She's beautiful. And I want her. I want everything to be fine.
Look, Simon, I know you saw...
I cut her off. I didn't see anything.
Well, I saw you,
she says. Her voice sharpens.
And Penelope. And...
I cut her off again. No, I mean... I'm not doing this right. I did see you in the wood, and I saw... him. But it's all right.
I know you wouldn't... Well, I know you wouldn't, Agatha. And it doesn't matter anyway. It was months ago. Her eyes are wide and confused. Agatha has lovely brown eyes, almost golden, and lovely long eyelashes. And the skin around her eyes sparkles like she's a fairy. She's not a fairy. Fairies who can speak with magic are welcome at Watford, if they can find it, but none have ever chosen to attend.
But Simon, we have to... I mean, shouldn't we talk about this?
I'd just rather move on, I say. It's not important, and it's just... Agatha, it's so good to see you. I reach for her hand. She lets me take it.
It's good to see you too, Simon.
I smile. She almost smiles back. 13. Agatha.
It's good to see him. It's always good to see him. It's always such a relief. I think about it sometimes, what it will be like the time that he doesn't come back. Someday Simon isn't going to come back. Everyone knows it. I think even the mage knows it. Penelope knows, but she doesn't believe. It's just... It's impossible for him to live through this. Too many people want him dead. Too many things worse than people. Dark things. Creatures. Whatever the insidious humdrum is. They all want him gone, and he can't keep surviving. There have been too many close calls. Nobody's that strong. Nobody's that lucky. Someday he won't come back, and I'll be one of the first people they tell. I've thought it out because I know that however I react, it won't be enough. Simon's the chosen one, and he chose me. And even though I love him, we grew up together. He spends every Christmas at my house. I do love him. It isn't enough. Whatever I feel isn't enough. It won't be enough when I lose him. What if it's like that time our collie got hit by a car? I cried, but only because I knew I was supposed to, not because I couldn't help it. I used to think that maybe I was holding back my feelings for Simon as some sort of self-defense, like to protect myself from the pain of losing him, the pain of maybe losing everything, because if Simon goes, what hope do any of us have? What hope do we have? Simon isn't the solution to our problems. He's just a stay of execution. But it isn't that. It isn't self-defense. I just don't love Simon enough. I don't love him the right way. Maybe I don't have that sort of love in me. Maybe I'm defective. And if that's the case, I may as well stand by Simon, shouldn't I? If that's where he wants me. If that's where everyone expects me to be. If it's the only place I can make any difference.
14. Simon. I spend an hour or so with Agatha, but we don't say much. I don't tell her about the mage. What if Agatha agreed with the mage? What if she wanted me to go too? I'd want her to go if she were in danger at Watford. Hell, she is in danger here. Because of me. When I get back to my room, Penny's there already, sprawled out with a book on Baz's bed.
So, you and Agatha talked?
She asks. We talked.
Did she explain? About Baz?
I told her not to.
Penny sets down her book. You don't want to know why your girlfriend was snogging your sworn enemy.
I don't know about sworn, I say. I've never taken an oath.
I'm pretty sure Baz has.
Anyway, they weren't snogging. Penny shakes her head.
If I caught Micah holding hands with Baz, I'd want an explanation.
So would I.
Simon!
Penny, of course you'd want an explanation. That's you. You like to demand explanations and then tell everyone why the explanations are crap.
I do not. You do.
But I... Look, I just don't care. It's behind us. Agatha and I are fine.
I wonder if it's behind Baz.
Fuck Baz. He'll do whatever he can to get to me.
And he'll start just as soon as he shows up, which could be any time.
Almost everyone is back already. Nobody wants to miss the welcome back picnic on the Great Lawn tonight. It's always a big to-do. Games, fireworks, spectacle magic.
Maybe Baz will miss the picnic. He's never missed it before, but it's a nice thought.
Penny and I meet Agatha out on the lawn. I don't see Baz, but there are so many people, it'd be easy for him to avoid me if he wanted. Baz normally makes sure that I see him. The little uns are already playing games and eating cake, some of them wearing their Watford uniforms for the first time, hats sliding off, ties crooked. There are races and singing. I get a bit choked up during the school song. There's this line about those golden years at Watford, those glowing, magical years, and it makes me think again about how this is it. Every day I have this year will be the last day like it. Last back-to-school picnic. Last first day back. I made a pig of myself, but Penny and Agatha don't mind, and the egg and cress sandwiches are to die for, plus roast chicken, pork pie, spice cakes with sour lemon frosting, and jugs of cold milk and raspberry cordial. I keep bracing for Baz to show up and ruin everything. I keep looking over my shoulder. Maybe this is part of his plan, to ruin my night by making me wonder how he's going to ruin it. I think Agatha is worried about seeing him too. One thing I'm not worried about is the humdrum attacking. He sent flying monkeys to attack the picnic at the start of our fourth year, and the humdrum never tries the same thing twice. I guess he could send something other than flying monkeys. After the sun sets, the little uns all head back to their rooms, and the seventh and eighth years stay out on the lawn. The three of us find a spot, and Penny spells her jacket into a green blanket for us to lie on, which Agatha says is a waste of magic when there are perfectly good blankets just inside.
"Your jacket is going to get grass stains," she says.
"Well, it's already green." Penelope dismisses her.
It's a warm night, and Penelope and Agatha are both good at astronomy. We lie on our backs, and they point out the stars.
"I should get my crystal ball and tell your fortunes," Penelope says, and Agatha and I both groan.
"I'll save you the trouble," I say. "You're going to see me bathed in blood, but you won't be able to tell whose it is, and you'll see Agatha looking beautiful and swathed in light."
Penelope pouts, but not for long. The night is too good for pouting. I find Agatha's hand in the blanket, and when I squeeze, she squeezes back. This day, this night, it all feels so right, magically right, like a portent. I didn't used to believe in portents, I'm not superstitious, but then we did a unit on them in magical science, and Penny said not believing in portents was like not believing in beans on toast. After an hour or so, someone crosses the veil right out onto the lawn. It's somebody's dead sister. She's come back to tell him that it wasn't his fault. I put my blade away on my own this time, without Penny telling me to.
"It's amazing," she says. "Two visitings in one day, and the veil is just beginning to open."
When the ghost leaves, everybody starts hugging each other. I think the seventh years have been passing around dandelion wine and Bacardi breezes. But the three of us aren't class monitors, so it's not our problem. Somebody starts singing the school song again, and we join in. Agatha sings, even though she's self-conscious about her voice. "I'm happy. I'm really happy. I'm home." I wake up a few hours later, and I think Baz must be back. I can't see him, I can't see anything, but there's someone in the room with me. Penny? Maybe it's the mage again, or the humdrum, or that thing I dreamt I saw by the window last night, which I'm only now remembering. I've never been attacked in my room before. This would be a first. I sit up and turn on the lights without trying. That happens sometimes with small spells when I'm stressed. It's not supposed to. Penny thinks it might be like telepathy, skipping the words to get straight to the goal. I don't see anything, though I think I hear a rustling sound and a sort of groaning. The windows are both open. I get up and look outside, then close them. I check under the beds. I risk an ollie ollie oxen free. Then a come out wherever you are that sends all my clothes flying out of the wardrobe. I'll put them away tomorrow. I go back to bed, shivering. It's cold, and I still don't feel alone. 15. Simon. Baz isn't in our room when I wake up. I look for him in the dining hall at breakfast, but he's not there either. His name is called during my first class, Greek with the Minotaur. Our teacher's name is Professor Minos. We call him the Minotaur because he's half man, half bull. He calls out Baz's name four times.
Tyrannus Pitch. Tyrannus Basilton Grim Pitch.
Agatha and I look around the room, then at each other. Baz is supposed to be in political science with me, too. Penny makes me take political science. She thinks I might end up a leader someday after I beat the humdrum. I'd be happy to spend my days helping Eb herd goats if I live through the humdrum, but political science is interesting enough, so I take it every year. Baz always takes it, too. Probably because he expects to reclaim the throne someday. Baz's family used to run everything before the mage came to power. Magicians don't have kings and queens, but the Pitches are the nearest thing we have to a royal family. They probably would have crowned themselves at some point if they'd ever expected anyone to challenge their authority. Baz's mum was the headmistress at Watford before the mage, which made her the most important person in magic. There's a hall near the mage's office with portraits of previous headmasters. It's like a Pitch family tree. It was actually her death that changed everything, that brought the mage to power. When the humdrum killed Headmistress Pitch by sending vampires into Watford, everyone saw that the world of mages had to change. We couldn't just keep on as we were, letting the humdrum and the dark creatures pick us off one by one. We had to get organized. We had to think about defense. The mage was elected mage, head of the coven, in an emergency session, and he was also made Watford's interim headmaster. That's technically still his title. He immediately started his reforms. Whether he's been successful or not depends on who you ask. The humdrum's still out there. But nobody's died on school grounds since the mage took over. And I'm still alive, so I guess I'm inclined to say he's doing a good job. A few years ago, we had to write essays for Poli-Sci about the mage's ascendancy. Baz's practically called for revolt, which took bottle, I thought, demanding that your headmaster step down in the text of a school assignment. Baz has always played a strange game, publicly expressing his family's politics, which are basically down with the mage, peacefully and legally, like he has nothing to hide, while his family leads an actual covert, dangerous war against us. If you ask the Pitches why they hate the mage, they start talking about the old ways and our magical heritage and intellectual freedom, but everyone knows they just want to be in charge again. They want Watford to go back to the way it used to be, a place for only the most rich and the most powerful. The mage eliminated school fees when he took over and threw out the oral presentations and power trials to get in. Literally anyone who can speak with magic can attend Watford now, no matter their skill or strength, even if they're half troll on their mother's side or more mermaid than mage. The school had to build another hall of residence, fraternity house, just to make room for everybody. Can't be too picky with cannon fodder, is Baz's take on the reforms. He just hates being treated like another student instead of the heir apparent. If his mother was still headmistress, he'd probably get his own room and whatever else he wanted. I shouldn't think like that. It's awful that his mum died. Just because I've never had parents doesn't mean I can't understand how much it would hurt to lose one. Baz doesn't show up to political science, so I keep an eye on his best friend, Neil, instead. Neil doesn't flinch when Baz's name is called, but he looks over at me like he's trying to say he knows I'm onto them and that he gives exactly zero fucks. I corner Neil after class. Where is he?
Your dick. Haven't seen it. Have you asked Eb?
Honestly, I'm not sure why goat herds take such crap for being perverts. Cowboys seem to get off scot-free.
Where's Baz? I say.
Neil tries to get past me, but I'm impossible to get past if I make the effort.
It's not that I'm big, I'm just bold. And when people look at me, they tend to see everything I've killed before.
Neil stops and hikes up his bag on his shoulder. He's a pale, weedy boy with brown eyes that he spells a muddy blue. Waste of magic. He sneers.
What's it to you, Snow?
He's my roommate.
I'd think you'd be enjoying the solitude.
I am.
So?
I step out of Neil's way. If he's planning something, I'll find out, I say. I always do.
So noted.
I mean it, I shout after him.
Your sincerity is also noted.
By dinner, I'm so antsy that I'm tearing my Yorkshire pudding to shreds while I eat. Yorkshire pudding, roast beef, gravy, is what we have for dinner every year on the first day of the term. I'll never forget my first Watford dinner. My eyes nearly popped out when Cook Pritchard brought out the trays of roast beef. I didn't care if magic was real at that moment, because roast beef and Yorkshire pudding are fucking real as rain.
He might just be on holiday or something, Penny says.
Why would he still be on holiday?
His family travels,
Agatha offers.
Oh, really, I want to say. Is that what you talk about alone in the woods? Your shared love of travel?
I rip off a chunk of bread and knock over my milk. Penny winces.
He wouldn't miss school, I say, picking up my glass.
Penny spells the milk away.
He cares too much about school.
Nobody argues with me. Baz has always ranked first in our class. Penny used to give him a run for his money, but being my sidekick eventually affected her grades.
I'm not your sidekick, she likes to say. I'm your dread companion.
Maybe, she suggests now. His family has decided to stop pretending that we're all at peace. 8th year is optional anyway. In the old days, lots of people left after the 7th. Maybe the pitches have decided to get serious.
Go to the mattresses, I say.
Exactly.
Against the mage and me, or the humdrum.
I don't know, Penny says. I always thought the pitches would just sit back and watch both sides destroy each other.
Thanks.
You know what I mean, Simon. The old families don't want the humdrum to win, but they don't mind him beating the mage down. They'll wait to attack when they think the mage is weak.
When they think I'm weak.
Same difference.
Agatha is staring over at the table where Baz usually sits. Neil and Dev, another of Baz's friends, his cousin or something, are sitting next to each other, talking with their heads close.
I don't think Baz dropped out, she says.
Penny, sitting across from us, leans into Agatha's line of sight.
Do you know something? What did Baz tell you?
Agatha looks down at her plate.
He didn't tell me anything. He must have told you something, Penny says. You talked to him last.
I clench my teeth.
Penelope,
I say without unclenching them.
I don't care if you two have agreed to move on.
She waves her hand at Agatha and me.
This is important. Agatha, you know Baz better than any of us. What did he tell you?
She doesn't know him better than I do, I argue. I live with him.
Fine, Simon. What did he tell you?
Nothing to make me think he'd drop out of school and miss a whole year of making me miserable.
He doesn't even have to be here to do that,
Agatha mutters. That pisses me off, even though I was thinking the same thing myself just yesterday. I'm done, I say. I'm going up to my room to enjoy the solitude. Penny sighs,
Calm down, Simon. Don't punish us just because you're feeling confused. We haven't done anything.
She glances over at Agatha and tilts her head.
Well, I haven't.
Agatha stands up too.
I've got homework.
We walk together to the door, then she turns off for the cloisters. Agatha! I call out. But I don't say it until she's too far away to hear. I have the room to myself and I can't even enjoy it because Baz's empty bed just seems sinister now. I summon the Sword of Mages and practice my form on his side of the room. He hates that.
16. Simon. Baz isn't at breakfast the next morning. Or the next. He isn't in class. The football team starts practicing and someone else takes his place. After a week, the masters stop saying his name when they take attendance. I trail Neil and Dev for a few days, but they don't seem to have Baz hidden away in a barn. I know I should be happy about Baz being gone. It's what I've always said I wanted, to be free of him. But it seems so wrong. People don't just disappear like this. Baz wouldn't. Baz is indelible. He's a human grease stain, mostly human. 3 weeks into the term, I still find myself walking by the pitch, expecting to see him at football practice, and when I don't, I take a hard turn out into the hills behind the school. I hear Eb shout at me before I see her.
Hiya, Simon. Ahoy!
She's sitting above me a ways in the grass with a goat curled up in her lap. Eb spends most of her time out in the hills when the weather is good. Sometimes she lets the goats roam the school grounds. She says they take care of weeds and predatory plants. The predatory plants at Watford will actually take you down if they get a chance. They're magic. The goats aren't, though. I asked Eb once if the magic hurts the goats when they eat it.
They're goats, Simon,
she said.
They can eat anything.
When I get closer, I see that Eb's eyes are red. She wipes them with the sleeve of her jumper. It's an old Watford school jumper, faded from red to pink and stained brown around the neck and wrists. If it were anybody else, I'd worry. But Eb is kind of a weeper. She's like Eeyore, if Eeyore hung out with goats all the time instead of letting Pooh and Piglet cheer him up. It gets on Penelope's nerves, all the crying, but I don't mind. The thing about Eb is, she never tells anybody else to keep their chin up or look on the bright side. It's very comforting. I flop down next to her in the grass and run my hand down the goat's back.
What are you doing up here?
Eb asks.
Shouldn't you be at football practice?
I'm not on the team. She scratches the goat behind the ears.
Since when do you let that stop you?
Eb sniffs. Are you okay? I ask.
Ah, sure.